Right, so here we are back again for season two. I am Nina Manning.
I'm Katie Griffiths.
And this is Sniffing the Pages podcast. And on this episode, we will be discussing After the Flood by Cassandra Montag, an epic dystopian saga, which is action-packed right to the magnificent crescendo. We'll also be discussing The Day We Meet Again by Miranda Dickinson, which is the brand new novel by the Sunday Times bestseller that will fill your heart with joy and make you believe in love at first sight again. But first...
Yeah, so first, we've got a very exciting first for the podcast, which is that we're discussing a book written by our very own Nina Manning, which was published in August.
Clapping.
That's a clapping. That's a clapping noise. I should clap. Yeah. So that's exciting. It's exciting for me. So yeah. I've obviously read it. I got it. I had pre-ordered it. So I got it on publication day and I finished it the day after publication day or something ridiculously quick because it's quite hard to put down.
Thank you.
I really needed to know what was going on. So yeah.
It was... published on the 1st of August, which seems like a million years ago.
It does
ago.
Feel like a long time ago now, doesn't it? It was a long old summer.
Yeah, it was a long
Especially
old summer.
Especially must have been a big summer for you. It's been exciting.
Yeah, totally busy. I just remember on publication day, getting the kids who were just all around me, and then I was like, right, get outside, put the rug down, gave them all an ice cream at 10 o'clock in the morning, and they all just sat outside eating ice cream
whilst
Chris and I were on our phones. Because it's actually quite a lot to do on publication day, which I didn't think... I mean, there is and there isn't. I mean, you can kind of just sit back and go, okay, my book's out there now, it's published. People are reading it. But also at the same time, there's so many emails and text messages to reply to. And then there's all the social media side of things and retweeting things and answering tweets and just pushing the book a little bit more. And
yeah, it's a marketing day as much as anything else. Because people some people have been able to read it before publication day. So you get the
yeah. There were some net galley reviewers.
Some advanced copies.
And then they did a blog tour off the back of that, so that went down really well as well.
This is exciting. So yeah, I'll tell you a little bit about the book. Would you like to tell everyone about the book, or would you like me to describe it?
I can't actually describe my book. I was having a conversation with I do this all the time, chat to authors, and then they say it's so hard when you write a book, and then having to
You need to almost like write yourself condense a soundbite.
That. Condense all those years of writing or months of writing into like just a couple of sentences.
Okay, well, I'll do my best and you can correct me if it becomes wildly
wrong. We should have the book near us.
I've only got a Kindle copy.
I've got them all scattered around the house, but none in the vicinity.
That's fine, I can remember it. I can cast my mind back to the beginning of August, which was quite a long time ago in my head.
Yeah.
So it's about the main characters are Daisy and Ben, who meet and fall in love and get married very quickly, and then it's broadly about the conflict between them and Ben's mum, so the mother-in-law Annie.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the book's called From the Point of View of Daisy and Annie, and there's also these perspectives from another character, Grace. It's very intriguing.
Listen to me like I didn't write it.
Sounds
great.
It is. It's a psychological thriller. It really keeps you guessing. I definitely couldn't put it down. I really needed to know what was going on. I text you a couple of times in the middle of it like, I'm not okay.
Yeah, a lot of people doing that. Like, who the hell is this? What's going on? I need to know this.
What is happening? Just tell me what's happening. It's fantastic. I very much recommend it if you like a psychological thriller.
I think I've probably got you on the psychological thriller boat now, haven't I?
Well, this is the thing, is obviously it's not really... I was a little bit worried about reading it because it's not really my genre. As you know, I don't normally read that much of a psychological thriller. So I was a bit thinking, I'm not sure I'm going to like it, not because it's not well written, but just because it's not my normal sort of thing. But actually, I did really enjoy it. It was really compelling. I really liked it. And I really liked the characters because... particularly Annie, because she's not likeable, and yet all the way through there's a bit of you that just really wants to understand her.
Mm.
It's really interesting to have kind of characters who come across negatively but relatable nonetheless, which just makes you sort of feel a bit unnerved the whole way through.
I think that's what's really important in psychological thrillers, and I'm not sure obviously if I was pulling it off when I was writing it, but this particular book took a long time to write because of having children and, you know, not having an agent and not having a publisher, and
it
just took forever.
It takes time.
But And obviously when I did get all those things, and it goes through lots more edits, and each time I sent it out to a publisher or an agent and got rejection, then you then re-edit it some more before you send it out the next time. Yeah. So it really has gone through like the most amount of structural storyline edits that it could possibly go through, and then all that kind of emotion sort of keeps getting poured into it the more times you edit it and rewrite it.
You've kind of built the layers of tension into it, because it's got a real sense of threat or sort of ominous tension running throughout it that you really pick up on right from the beginning. But I think I remember you saying to me when you first wrote it, it wasn't a psychological
thing. I think deep down I knew that it needed to be darker.
It's hard to imagine it without that kind of that ominous sort of sense of threat that I mentioned that you can feel running through it. I can see why you say it needed it, because without it, it's in a sort of a nice story, but with it, it's really gripping and intense, and it definitely changes it.
Yeah, it had gone through, like I said, lots of different agents, and one agent picked it up. Quite a few agents picked it up and said, send me the full manuscript, which I did, and then they refused it after that. This particular agent said, this is great, I like so much about it, but would you consider changing it to a psychological thriller? I was like, argh. And it was just at the time when Gone Girl had come out, so you can see how long ago
how long it's been changing.
That book was of its time, sort of 5-6 years ago, but it's only just got to publication now, which is frustrating in a way, but I can't change what it is. It is what it is, but it's slightly frustrating in the sense that now the market is not saturated as such, but it is,
there's a lot more of that genre out there. Yeah, it's grown,
it's a very, very competitive market.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I've had a few comments that have come back and said, I've read so many of these kind of books before. Some people are like complimentary about that. I've read so many of these books before, but
this
was
is
still
a really
great.
Good example of that genre. Yeah,
others were like, whatever. Not many, a few, obviously, not because it's had lots of 4 and 5 star reviews, but
I think the thing, I mean, for me it's difficult because it's not a genre I've read widely in. I've read some books in, read some psychological thrillers, but not many. I don't have the same sense of having read lots and lots. When I do read books in the genres that I read a lot of, sort of fantasy or young adult fantasy, women's section, sometimes I do read books within that genre where I think I've read that before effectively. So I can see what you mean, but then I think it's, I don't know, you still bring something individual to it, don't you? There's something in
everything. Yeah, definitely. And I think just writing in general, you're going to always end up copying something
the way. If you read a lot, to not put, one of the things they always say is if you want to write, read. Read lots and lots, and that will help you become a better writer. But what it does mean is that some of the things that are in your head will have come from other books, not intentionally, but just those things will seep into your consciousness, or those ideas will sit around in there, and it will be duplicated, but it will be your spin on it and your character's spin on it, and therefore it's not the same. It's not the same, no two books are the same.
So it is quite hard going forward thinking about book 2, which is almost finished, but
yes, you've had a deadline.
And now I'm sort of panicking, thinking, has this already been done before? And I'm hoping it hasn't, and so I'm trying to squeeze as many kind of different things in there that hopefully haven't been done before.
Yeah, it's that pressure. So do you feel more pressure with this one now?
But I think as it gets closer to the deadline and the publication, which will be early next year, I am suddenly thinking, now I've kind of got something to live up towards.
Yeah, because you've got an expectation that exists.
A lot of people have said,
I mean, I'm sure you'll smash
we're
it,
really but looking forward to what she's going to write next, and I'm like, oh no, it's okay.
Which is what it's lovely in lots of ways to like to for people to have liked your work enough to be looking forward to the next thing you write. Is
because I read
what you want, but there's also that, of course,
because you read so many reviews all the time, don't you? I'll give an example of Leanne Moriarty. Is that how we say her name?
Moriarty. Big Little Lies.
So she did Big Little Lies, which obviously was just amazing and got made into a 2-series program. Yeah. And then obviously she did 9 Perfect Strangers, I think. And that has not had so many good reviews, which I think people just then end up comparing it to that one, which was...
I think the problem if you have one really, really successful, particularly if it's a debut, I don't know if that was for her or not. Or if you have one like breakout novel that really...
No, she had a couple before that.
Really but catches people, then expectations go super high. I mean, it's things like any author really who's very successful probably has this issue, is that And also, people just like, people have favourites. So often, I think the first book you read by someone is often your favourite because it's the first time you've experienced their voice or their like perspective or view on the world. So it's really new. Mm. It's quite hard to keep that going, but I don't know.
I'm just going to keep bashing them out. So well, there'll be two out next year, and then we'll just see how it goes. But I mean,
you've picked up the pace.
I know. I mean, once you've got a deadline, that's it. I just find my fingers are flying. I'm like, oh, I've got a deadline.
Nothing,
I've got to write
nothing like
it.
A bit of deadline pressure. Yeah. Everywhere's coming out of you.
But no, it's been really fun. I've really enjoyed this experience, having had the experience of going through all the editing.
Yeah,
with
that
the first
long
one.
Slog with the first one. This process is a lot different.
It feels much nicer because, like, well, actually, you know, this is what I'm doing now, and I've got this deadline to work towards, and you know, it's going to be fine. I don't know if I'm going to be a psychological thriller writer.
In the long run, no.
It's just happened to just be what somebody suggested, you know.
Well, and you've done it very well, so yeah. I mean...
Do you fancy doing that? Yeah, okay, then I'll bash
it
up.
Yeah.
I've got other ideas up my sleeve. I've got a young adult novel that I'm halfway through. And an uplit novel.
Oh, yes.
That I've got a few ideas that I've just been...
Hard to change genres, but it's quite hard to, like, if you change genre completely, do you need a completely new agent, or do you...
No, my agent, luckily, represents me for young adult as well.
Oh, okay, that's good.
And any other genre, really, women's so fiction, like, rom-com, and, you know, uplit, that sort of thing. So, yeah, for those ones, absolutely no problem, so...
That's good.
Yeah, we'll just see how that goes. I'm going on a writing retreat.
Lovely.
To Yorkshire next Sunday.
So it's flowing. Do you find you're writing it faster than you wrote? As I know the
I know
the editing and the process. Obviously, the first one took a long time, but the
I am writing it much faster. Yeah. I mean, I probably wrote the last one fast, but the daughter-in-law. Let's call it that because we've
I was so excited. I was introducing your book. I didn't even tell people the name.
Now we're gonna have to say it about 17 times.
The daughter-in-law by Nina Manning.
The daughter-in-law. That's the daughter-in-law. The daughter-in-law.
Just get it in there.
So when I was writing the daughter-in-law, which has been through about 5 title changes as well, let's just check we're actually recording. We are. Oh, what was I saying?
I can't remember. Oh no, this is what happens when you record on a Friday night. We're all done.
With gin.
My brain's gone.
Yeah, I probably...
Catch me on a Tuesday.
Yeah. I probably did write it fast, but like I said, the journey to publication was such a long journey.
Yeah, that's what it means. It's more through that process so is longer than the actual writing.
Yeah.
So when you've written the first one, and you have to think of the second... Did you have the idea of the second one before you'd finished the first one?
I had a very vague idea of something that I wanted to write a book about a certain scene that occurs in the book.
Okay, yeah.
That's quite important to the book. I had that idea, but then obviously you've got to then...
Build a book
carve
around it,
an entire story around that with characters and subplots and all that kind of stuff, so... I think, yeah, as long as you've got some vague idea of something that you want to do, then it's you just got to kind of find a way to, like, mould the rest of the words around it, really. But what happened was I was with my agent, and my agent said, could you just put a synopsis together for this book too?
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm just going to go away and do that now.
How quickly?
by next week, please. So, yeah, I had to do that. So that was like, shit, quick, think of some more ideas.
Do you think it stayed, now you've written it, has it stayed quite true to that synopsis?
It has,
or does
actually.
It, like, wander off accidentally
while
you're writing it?
It has, actually, yeah. It has stayed quite true to that. I had to send another synopsis to my agent recently because I think she wanted something to go to the Frankfurt Literary Festival for to try and sell the daughter-in-law to Europe to see if it would get translated into some other languages.
Oh, that would be so cool.
And then she just said, give me another synopsis as well for book two, just so they can got something to kind of talk about as well, I suppose.
Because you do sometimes hear authors talking about books that they've sort of planned, and then as they're writing it, it goes in a totally different direction than the direction that they've planned, or their characters suddenly things that you weren't really expecting them to do, and you're like, wait, what's happened here?
So all that happened was I sort of ended up fleshing out I've fleshed out the novel more, basically. So it's got a few more dimensions. There's some flashbacks. to the 90s.
I've had fantastic love of 90s.
Doing that, all my research, you should just like have a look at my Google search history. It's like 90s clothes, 90s music. I was listening to a 90s playlist the other day.
Sitting there writing in double denim to get in the mood. Scrunchy in your hair. Yeah. Oh, what a great time.
It's like finding out all my... going back and looking through my Facebook to try and find some photos of stuff that I put there from me when I was like 18. Yes, going out in disgraceful like lycra, fluorescent.
It was an interesting time for fashion in the 90s, wasn't it?
It was.
I was quite young in the 90s, so I think that was formative for me. I'm not sure what that says about my fashion sense now.
And I think, because I've just, and I'll quickly just say it now, put it in here, Daniel, oh my goodness, I can't remember, it's Daniel Rachel.
Oh yeah, you were
his
saying
about book called "Don't Look Back in Anger," which I've been loving. I'm about halfway through, and yeah, it's just like the nostalgia is insane. It's just throwing me back to the 90s. That's helped quite a lot.
Yeah, it's a good book to be reading. And just realizing that
we didn't know that we were in such an amazing era. That cool Britannia era between sort of 97, 98.
So does that help when you're writing? If you are writing, when you're writing sort of flashbacks or writing into the past, does it help you to listen to music from that time and kind of set yourself back in that place?
Yeah, definitely. Like, if I listen to music from the 90s, it definitely just takes me straight back
there. Helps you with that writing. Mm. It'd be awkward if you want to write something in, like, the
1800s.
Yeah. What am I going to listen to?
What can I listen to? I couldn't even tell you. My history is appalling.
No, I was going to say something, then I thought, nope, that'll be wildly out, and people will come, someone will notice, message me.
There'll be a lynching.
I'm not even going to go there. Expose my lack of musical knowledge.
But yes, The Daughter-in-Law is out now in ebook, audio and paperback, and you can buy it on Amazon, and it's currently £1 in ebook, and also... it has book club questions.
Yes, it does. So... it has book club questions at the back. I should have brought them to ask you.
Mm. No, but that would give spoilers.
It would. Well, this is the problem, is I find it's quite hard. I thought this when I was coming to talk to you about it.
Mm.
I thought it's... because it's so twisty and so many different things happen, it's difficult to talk too much about the plot without, and that's why I haven't talked much about the plot, because I don't want to ruin it for anyone.
Mm.
There were so many moments where I was like... yeah. But I don't want to take that away from anybody else's experience.
No, that's the problem. It is psychological thrill.
So, very strong recommend from me, and probably from you too.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. Definitely,
I like it. It's good. Is that how you're introducing it?
After the flood has gone, it's
Nina's singing us into discussion about "After the Flood" by Cassandra Montag. I don't know if there's a blurb for this. Should I read the blurb?
There is, just on the inside page there.
Here we go. I'll read this because it'll explain it better than I could. The world is mostly water when Pearl is born. The floods have left America a cluster of small islands with roving trade ships and raiders. Pearl knows little of her father Jacob and elder sister Ro, who left her mother Myra when she was pregnant with her. Although their life is a tranquil one, Myra still aches for the daughter she once lost. When a chance encounter reveals that Ro might still be alive, Myra packs up 6-year-old Pearl and together they begin a dangerous voyage across the waters to the valley, where rumours of violence and breeding of ships run rampant. Finally, they find solace on board Sedna, full to the brim with supplies and an able crew, and closer to finding Ro than they've ever been. But to get to Ro, Myra will have to deceive everyone around her, betraying the trust of those she's come to love, and ask herself if she's willing to sacrifice everything and everyone for what might be nothing at all. I actually hadn't read that before I read the book.
Ah, it's good, because I hadn't either. And then I read it afterwards, I was like, oh yeah, totally was like that.
That's a good description of the book. Good blurbing.
Yeah, but when you read a description of a book before, you're just like, yeah, whatever. It doesn't really kind of sink in until...
yeah, I mean, I don't always like reading too much, because some blurbs give away a lot of... I remember reading one book, this is ages ago, but... where something in the blurb was mentioned that didn't happen until like 3/4 of the way through the book.
Oh, I hate that.
So I spent the entire book waiting for this thing to happen. Like, yeah. I enjoy the book. It's annoying.
No, that happens.
But that doesn't happen in this. That's not the case in this case. This is actually it's a good, solid blurb.
It was.
But yeah, it's frustrating when that does happen.
I thought it was so amazing.
I loved it. I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it. It's quite a big book. And when it first started, I wasn't sure where it was going to go. So it's a dystopian world in that it's post some cataclysmic event. It's post these right. There's been several series of floods and see the rising water levels and all this has happened. So it's this post-apocalyptic kind of atmosphere. And I wasn't sure what kind of book it was going to be. And that was it. You know, that sort of very examining the human condition post disaster. But it was much more of a gripping, pacey read than I was anticipating. I think I was thinking it'd be much more thoughtful, and actually it was. I mean, the words, the description, unputdownable, is wildly overused, but I literally, genuinely, did sit up quite late finishing it because I was like, when I can't get to sleep at this point. I need to know what's going to happen.
I fell asleep reading it many a night, not because it was boring me, because I just couldn't
kept going until
my eyes closed. Basically,
saying to you before we started recording, I was like, right, I'll just read to a nice stopping point, and I couldn't. There wasn't a point where the action died back enough for me to feel comfortable stopping.
And it just didn't stop. It was relentless. Once we got past that first section where she gets onto the
Sedna.
Once she got onto that boat, then it was just relentless till the very end of the book. Literally, the last.
I mean, it's
pages.
So much happens, and it's so engaging and so. Yeah, compelling to read.
I would only say
Myra.
I did. I would say my only downfall, the only downfall for me, and I'm not going to give the ending away, was maybe once they reached the destination, it didn't kind of pan out how I thought it was. Maybe the ending was quite rushed. There was all this action, and then all of a sudden it was like.
A lot happened in a very, very short space of time at the end, and it tied up quite quickly, given the kind of scope of the journey to that point. It did tie up very quickly, but
really long list of characters.
Yeah, so there's a lot of characters in it, but I mean the main character, really Myra, who's the mum, and that's the book is sort of broadly from her perspective, I think.
And then from a mother's point of view, how difficult did you find reading those first scenes when her daughter is taken away from her?
Yeah, I mean her daughter being taken away from her, and then this whole book about is really a lot of it is about her personal. You know, her personal struggle is that she's got a daughter, she's caring for Pearl, she's got to put Pearl's, you know, health and life as a huge priority. But also, she's got this daughter that was taken away, and so she's got to decide, am I going to risk Pearl and her welfare to go and try and look for Ro? And that's as a mum, you think that's impossible. That's an impossible choice. What do you do? You can't just say, I'm not going to look for the daughter that was taken away from me, particularly when you know she's in a situation that's quite possibly dangerous. You know, she's got information now that suggests she's still alive, but they're in a situation that's not good. Of course, as a mum, you're going to go and do anything to get there on any chance. But at the same time, the guilt of, am I putting my other child at risk? And that thread just ran through it for me and was really...
It was there, wasn't it? Prominent
really felt,
all the time.
I really felt that. We felt that for her.
But Pearl was quite a feisty little bugger, wasn't she?
I loved Pearl.
At the same time, she was. You like she says in the end. Myra says she forgets how young she is, and I don't know if you find the same with your daughter.
Well, interestingly, I didn't really realise that she was six, so I just read.
No,
the things,
I thought
like,
she was
6 years old.
Well,
wow.
I thought she was seven actually, but still, that's still ridiculously young, isn't it? And you forget how young they are, and when you have daughters and they're very independent, like we have, and they can be quite feisty and just little mini versions of us, really. And, and we created these monsters.
Those things being reflected back at you, great. Yeah,
but. Yeah, she was a fantastic character, but then there was also moments where you realise she's just a little girl. She's vulnerable.
She's very young.
She's very, you know, naive, and she doesn't understand. And then there were so many times when Myra had to leave her, you know,
situations. I mean, one of the things I found really interesting about Pearl is that she was born after the flood had happened.
Yeah.
So she was born on a boat, and
so
she had
only
always
ever
lived
knew,
on the water.
Known water, yeah.
And I just thought that, like, having that perspective is so interesting, like, compared to Myra and the sort of older characters who remember what life was like before.
Sorry, dog.
The things that are... Dog snoring in the background.
Dog snoring, as
the things
usual.
That are sort of... you take for granted or that you remember, and how much Pearl just accepts as normality, because that's the only normal she's ever known.
And when she gets to...
So it's almost like she doesn't miss things
when
she
they get
had.
To land, she does... There is... The author does do a good job of describing the fact that Pearl hadn't been on land before, so this was her first experience, and she looked uncomfortable and out of place.
Yeah, she doesn't enjoy being on land. It's not usual for her. Like, she feels unsteady or, you know... unsafe, but unsettled on land compared to being on the water, which sort of she's used to.
So there was this always this underlining sense of, I've always felt on edge and tense as I was reading it, just because they were on the water for so long. And I'm not a massive fan of the water.
Yeah, so it's definitely, and the whole thing is clearly...
well, it's terrifying to think that actually that's potentially our future.
And I suppose that's the other thing, is because it's not wildly in the future, either. It isn't like a thousand years.
I think it's like a century. They call it the 100-year flood, so it's been happening for 100 years.
So it's certainly what I guess, reasonably near dystopian future that realistically the way the climate is going these days isn't beyond the realms of possibility. And so you do have that like at the back of your head when you're reading a book like this, that how possible it is and how possible it feels. And thing I always think with books like this is it really raises the question, what would you do? Like, what would you be capable of? What would you do to survive? I mean, the tagline on the front of this, and this is a proof copy, so I don't know what the actual book will look like, but it says, life is about more than surviving. The whole way through, I read the book, I kept coming back to that quote, or that sort of subtitle on the front, and thinking that's a really good one for this book, because it's actually about, you can just survive day to day, and that's what Pearl and Myra have been doing. Or you can, take a risk, or... push a bit further, and that, you know, the thing that push prompts them to do that is this search for Roe. But then might that get you something more than just this day to day?
And I think that was also the psychological journey that Myra went on, and then when she comes to the end of the journey and how she feels about everything. I think she learns so much along the way about herself. I mean, she tries to control everything so much, and she feels like she has to be in control of everything, and she has to do everything. She pushes away so much help from Daniel all the time, and
so I don't think it says that Jacob and her sister Ro left Myra in the thing. But what happens in the book, and it's quite early on, is that one day she just sees them. So Jacob's in a boat and he's taking Ro with her, and she's calling for her mum, and her mum and Myra's stuck in the house and she can't go after them because they've gone off in a boat. And that kind of moment of like really deep trauma.
Oh, the last like things that she sees is her child like holding her arms out and crying
back
for her mum.
I mean, honestly, like 3 years old or something. The whole thing makes me feel really it hits you right where it hurts. And it does feel really I don't know, it's that deep sort of set trauma throughout it. And that Myra sort of going through the journey that the book takes her on, she's processing that still, and she's processing what happened and kind of that need to survive on her own and to prove herself. And
also feeling so responsible for everything and everyone.
Yeah, because of course, literally...
As we mothers do anyway.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? That's a really relatable emotion.
Coupled with the fact
emotion.
That you're on a boat, a dystopian future.
You're literally on a boat on your own with your child. You could not be more entirely and wholly responsible for her well-being. It's like being a mum but under a magnifying glass, isn't it? It's just...
But then things do kind of improve for her when she gets, obviously there's all the storms and all the elements to deal with once they're on the ship with their crew. But, they have that nice relationship with all the different characters. So there's Marjan, which almost sounds like a herb, doesn't it? Marjan, who instantly kind of takes a bit of a dislike to Myra because Myra's got, obviously, this plan that she needs to get to Ro.
Yeah, so
I think she's very suspicious of her, isn't she?
And I think that's one of the things, is that obviously one of the things I liked about it is that to start with, Myra's very much got this attitude with the people on board the boat that they're a means to an end for her. They're going to get her to Ro, and that's what they're for. But the more time she spends with them, the more it sort of breaks down those walls that she's put up around herself, or she starts to come to feel more for them. They become like a sort of family. They're bonding together. And then the fact that she's having to betray or lie or deceive them in some way becomes harder and harder for her to justify and to bear, and she's holding that all in herself. It's not only is she risking Pearl, but that she's risking all these other people that she's starting to come to really care for. And again, it's like, how far would you go? How far would you go for your child? And ultimately, I guess the answer is you'd do pretty much anything, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would, absolutely. And I don't suppose you realise how much you do until you're put into that situation, just exactly what your body is capable of going through. And so many times I just thought, man, she is badass.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
how many times did she just, like, kick ass?
I know. And I mean, like, I guess if you think, like, oh my God, that's incredible. But then that's what I mean about books like this, when you think, what would I be capable of? You know, if this happened and I was cast afloat with my single child in a boat, yeah, you'd take out threats. You just would. Not because you'd necessarily be capable of it, because you're fighting to survive, like that survival instinct, and then that also that protective, like maternal instinct or parental instinct, I suppose, comes really to the fore, and you can do all sorts of shit you might not have thought you were capable of.
There was an amazing quote, and I think it was Marjan who spoke it, because there was a moment when I think that Myra, when she first gets on board the ship, she just presumes that nobody is in as a terrible a situation as she is, and yeah, she's the only course, one that's kind of fighting to, you know, find a lost child. But obviously everybody's going through their own shit, and they've all lost people along the way.
I think the thing is, everybody's lost something, and that's one of the things about this, is that Pearl's quite a novelty. There's not very many children in this world. Not many of them have survived, because it's not easy to survive.
Marjan sort of falls in love with her, and I think she talks about her child that she lost, and I think she says something like, I think this is what she said, but anyway, it's a beautiful quote. Regardless, children think we make them, but we don't. They exist somewhere else before us, before time. They come into the world to make us. They make us by breaking us first. Yes. And I just thought that was probably quite apt, considering you've just both come out of the other side of the summer holidays.
Yeah.
With
yeah, they make us by kids. Breaking us first. I'm just looking back on my things. I actually think I took a picture of some quotes from this book, because I liked them so much.
I felt like it was a combination of Bird Box.
Yes.
And
yeah, that makes sense.
Waterworld. Do you ever remember that film Waterworld?
Yeah,
with Kevin Costner?
Yeah.
But that was the melting of the polar caps, and then they're all surviving, and I think they somehow evolved to the point where they developed gills. So that's what they were, how they were surviving.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously this book hadn't reached that point by that point, but by the end of it I did feel, what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
Are they going to, are the sea levels going to reduce, or are they going to keep rising, or what?
Yeah, it's that, definitely that sense of, I found the quote I was looking for, sorry. So it's not dissimilar to what you've read out, but it's from Daniel this time. It's quite late on, but it doesn't give anything away. It says, Myra, you aren't hurting because you have no heart. You're hurting because you're carrying two other hearts in you.
Yeah.
You'll always have them. You'll always have to carry them. They're your gift and your burden. And I just think that's like...
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, that there's another line just a tiny bit further down, which is, you must become someone you haven't had to be yet. And that's what I think, what we were talking about, like, what would you do, or what would you do to survive? You become someone you haven't previously had to be, but circumstances have forced you to cope. And that's just such a excellent line for all people in all, you know, in any adverse situation, you become what you have to be to survive.
And now on to The Day We Meet Again by Miranda Dickinson. And Miranda's written quite a few books. I'm new to Miranda. She looks like a very nice lady on Twitter.
Yeah, so I think this is her 10th book. Shall I give you the blurb at the back? So it says, their love story started with goodbye. We'll meet again at St Pancras Station a year from today. If we're meant to be together, we'll both be there. If we're not, it was never meant to be. Phoebe and Sam meet by chance at St Pancras Station, heading in opposite directions, both seeking their own adventures. Meeting the love of their lives wasn't part of the plan. So they make a promise to meet again in the same place in 12 months' time if they still want to be together. But is life ever as simple as that? This is a story of what ifs and maybes, and how one decision can change your life forever.
I mean, it's as kind of the perfect backdrop to a film or a book goes, a train station where you meet the love of your life.
I love that. I mean, actually, if anything, my biggest criticism, not even really the white word of this book, is that, like, their chemistry together of the two main characters, I loved so much that I was disappointed there wasn't more of it. So they meet, they fall in love, and it's, I don't actually believe in love at first sight, but this made it believable.
Mm.
Like, it really felt like it was happening. I was there with them, they were, you know, meeting, there were sparks, this whole thing was really just something very special. And then obviously the issue is they're both off on these very big, important adventures. They're huge, you know, they're big life-changing things they're going to go and do. It's not just I'm popping to Bath for the weekend. one of them. Sam's going off to Scotland to find some truth about his past and his family, and Phoebe's off on this adventure around Europe that I guess she never thought she'd be brave enough to take.
Fantastic. I just wanted to be her, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely incredible.
I mean, I wonder if Miranda, when she was writing this, that was what she was imagining for herself, or maybe she's experienced those things herself.
So there's a bit where she's
epic.
In Italy, like restoring this library and this restoring a library in an old sort of, you know, magical property, and I was just like, oh my god, this is my dream.
Yeah.
It sounds incredible.
It did. And the stone painting and all that. They both meet
and then they make a decision not to sacrifice those journeys for one another, so that they don't, you know, in case they start resenting each other for that.
Which is a very mature decision. I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it? Because, I mean, that is potentially what goes wrong with a lot of relationships, because people end up resenting each other because they didn't.
Yeah, well, you put your lives... The thing is, you don't always meet people. I guess that's the point of the book, isn't it? You don't meet people at a time that it is convenient for you. You don't meet the love of your life, the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with, or not in this case, but you generally... at a time that it's convenient. Like, I definitely didn't meet my husband at a time that was the right time.
Mm.
I remember thinking, this is not really a good time for me, actually. Mm.
But it's whether they...
You can't help it.
But it's whether you've got the maturity levels and the emotional intelligence to kind of say, well, this is where we are in our lives, this is what we need to do. You know, we like each other, we'll just kind of...
We'll trust that if this is real, we'll get there.
Mm.
You know, we'll both still want it in a year's time, which is really... I mean, I liked it. I say, my only criticism is really a compliment, which is that their chemistry was so good that
I wanted more of them together,
whereas obviously a lot of the book is them on their separate journeys and they kind of...
I wonder if they made it into a film, they would focus more on a bit more time with them together, or maybe the book only works because they have that short period of time
together.
I think, to be honest,
it does work for that reason. It's just that I really love the two of them together and could have taken more of it, but that's just me. It was a fun book for me to read because it's not the way me and my husband met at all, but sort of right at the beginning, we were friends first, and right at the beginning of our sort of romantic relationship.
Courtship,
yeah, exactly. He went to Australia for a year.
Wow.
And so a lot of this, the being apart, the texting, the...
She wrote your life.
Yeah, well, it's not quite, but definitely there were bits of it that felt very familiar, particularly the sort of, well, I don't know, how much should we be in contact? And...
Yeah, I like those things. At the beginning, they're very...
Difficult it is to be really yourself over...
Oh, you can't. Well, that's the problem. We've had these conversations before, haven't we? How I personally feel sorry for... the youth of today and how are they going to communicate, because you haven't got empathy through text messages
you can't pick up on nuances. It's difficult. It's not the same as being face to face, and that there's misunderstandings or miscommunications,
and that always
happens in
dating relationships in the beginning, doesn't it?
Of course,
you're always getting it wrong.
But it's worse when you're in different countries, and that felt quite familiar, that just sort of that worry.
What does he mean by that?
Yeah, or what does... Have I said that wrong? I shouldn't have said that.
But then, of course, go straight out there and say the big L word, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does jump
quite
in pretty early with that. And then his reaction, and... I found him a little bit frustrating at times in this. I'm not going to lie. Like, pull your shit together, Sam. Come on now.
Yeah. You know.
Particularly that sense of him kind of blaming her for things that happen, when I was like, Sam, this is your fault. It's on you, buddy.
Yeah. Yes. But there was that lovely subplot with him that he was seeking his...
Everything
out
that
his
happened
past.
In Scotland in this book just made me want to go back to Scotland.
Yeah, because you spent some time there recently, didn't you?
Yeah, which I haven't been that many times, but it was just... It's beautiful. Like, it's sense of, I think... Often when you're talking about it, you talk about a sense of place, and this is done. It's done really nicely because it's a nice contrast as well. Because Phoebe's off in Europe in this sort of more sunny and warm environment, and he's in Scotland, which isn't usually the most sunny and warm environment, but
it's very
atmospheric and beautiful and striking and meaningful to him in its own way. And I really really enjoyed those sections and that journey that he went on to find parts of his family that he had lost or. Left him when he was a child.
Yeah, so a book about taking chances and leaps of faith and
Yeah,
just a lovely act of serendipity in the beginning. And
I really liked it as well, because it had, you know, books like this have the potential to be predictable, but I didn't feel like it was. No. Like, it kept changing things up, you know, the goalposts kept moving, and it felt...
I like the music element with Sam and his...
His and...
background with his...
There are other characters and their relationships with the main characters. I particularly like Sam's relationship with his... with his friend... Yeah, his auntie, but his friends from uni as well. Mm. It's not that often, I think, in fiction that you get male characters with really strong friendships where they talk about shit in their lives and that's just normal. You know, it's really nice to have that normalised sense of men having issues and talking about them. It's great.
Mm.
And I really liked them as a group. And there were moments in the book where I was like, I'm not sure how this is going to pan out.
Mm.
I'm not certain.
It took a while, didn't it?
And I'm not certain of what that... I feel like I know there's going to be a happy ending, or I certainly hope so, but I'm not sure of what that happy ending is going to be. And that's nice in a book like this, because you can have ones that are very... very predictable from the beginning, and I mean, sometimes very predictable books are exactly what you want in life.
Yeah,
but it was nice to have something a little bit different as well.
Yeah, there was a lot of mashups in the middle of it that just kept you reading, really. And
yeah, and it was all very human, wasn't it? Like, people, you say the wrong thing at the wrong time, or things are miscommunicated or misunderstood, and it all escalates. And that is how life and relationships work. It's messy. It's not straightforward. You don't, you know, meet and then immediately fall in love and there's no more problems happy ever after, exactly, immediately, straight away. So yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, very great,
very good book.
So it's been a long time that we've been apart, Katie.
Yes, it has.
We've seen bits of each other, but obviously summer holidays, busy with
summer
kids.
Summer holidays are a bit crazy.
Keeping them occupied. I didn't read a huge amount. I read an amazing book. Oh, I must say about the book that I read, actually, because I think I did say I would say about it on the podcast. So hopefully it's still recording whilst I go into my phone and have a look. But it was a book called Reality Boy.
Oh, yeah, I saw you.
And I was reading it, and I didn't at any point think, am I reading a male author or a female author? It was just one of those things that it didn't really kind of click. And then afterwards, when I realised... I've just been reading a female author. I think, actually, subconsciously, I was thinking... it was male. Because when authors do just refer to themselves with their initials and their surname. So it was by A.S. King. And it's a young adult book. And as I said before, because I'm reading a young adult novel, I thought actually be quite good research for me to
Read
a couple more young adults. I've read a few. And I really enjoy young adult novel. Novels, but yeah, it was brilliant. It was a brilliant, brilliant book about a boy who, from a very young age, had a TV nanny come into his house to deal with his behaviour.
Interesting.
And then, as a result of that exposure and that constant kind of blame that was put on him, he started sort of acting more out of character and basically pooing everywhere. So at any opportunity he'd take to shit in his mum's shoes or on the dining room table.
Cool.
And then he sort of grew up to be known as the crapper. And then that kind of had a lot of psychological effects on him. And then he had to have some counselling, and he was putting a special class at school. But actually, all the while, do you know what? There really wasn't a huge amount wrong with him. And then he meets this wonderful girl who totally gets him. And then the story just kind of flourishes from there. But yeah, I bloody loved it by the end of it. I was like, do you know what? I'm really glad I picked it. It's just one of those books that you see it in the library, pick it up, and it's like, brilliant.
I love when that happens, when you pick up a book and you're not necessarily anticipating how it will be, and it just turns out to be incredible.
Mm.
So I read a lot this summer. I'm not going to read it all out. I'm not going to tell you every single one, because we would be here for hours. But I'll give you some highlights. So I read two books quite early in the summer that were amazing. Both 5 stars, back to back as well. I was like, what kind of an amazing reading run am I having? What a life. The first one is called Sing, Unburied, Sing by Jesmyn Ward.
Sing, Unburied, Sing.
And it's sort of like it's a bit of a ghost story, a bit of a kind of travelogue, a bit of a family drama. It's just, the thing about both of these books probably is actually more than anything else is how beautifully they're written and how incredibly well they draw their characters. I think that's probably one of the things I really like in the book is really strong characters, and that's... really really comes through in that one. And then the next one is called Stay With Me by, I'm going to try my best to pronounce this as well as I can, Ayobami Adebayo.
Oh.
And this is about someone who, they're struggling to have, her and her husband are struggling to have children. And
I think I just, you posted me on this. Yeah. You were surprised by how much you loved it, weren't you?
Yeah, so these are the last two books, and I've been sort of rationing them to myself, but the books that were recommended to me on my reading spa at Mr. B's in Bath. And this one I had sort of, it was kind of my wild card, if that makes sense, when I picked up. They recommend like quite a lot of books to you, and you can buy as many of them as you like, but I limited myself to 8 in a huge act of self-restraint. And this one was kind of my, oh, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this, but someone's recommended it to me, so I'll try something a bit different. And I was completely blown away by it. It was absolutely beautiful. So yeah, very, very strong recommend to that one. And then the only other ones that I've loved this summer are called a duology. They're young adult fantasy. They're called Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom by Leigh Bardugo. And they're, if you like, yeah, fantasy, particularly that kind of young adult fantasy, it's like a Ocean's 11 in a fantasy world sort of vibe, where they're kind of like a team of oddballs pulling off a heist. Oh, I just love it. And the whole book just ticks so many boxes. Like, the characters are so much fun, their chemistry and interaction between them is really great, and they're just, yeah, brilliant. Really enjoyable characters.
You did really well and read loads. I read nothing hardly, but
yeah, I don't know why. I don't know how I managed to read so much, really. I think I just must have been ignoring my children a lot.
I was just too busy writing.
Yeah, but you were actually writing, which is the daughter-in-law. That's what you were doing with your time.
Putting that out into the world. The Daughter-in-Law by Nina Manning. So on the next episode of Sniffing the Pages, we will be discussing I Wanted You to Know by Laura Pearson.
And The Lost Ones by Anita Frank.
Which looks brilliant.
It does look very intriguing and also scary. Beautiful. Again, this is a proof, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a very pretty proof.
I think when it's a hardback, it will probably look quite similar, but and then it will just sheeny look.
I know you're not
it?
Supposed to judge a book by its cover and all that, but
we do.
It does look very pretty, so that's a positive start for you.
And also, we'll be in conversation with Laura Pearson about I Wanted You to Know, her third novel, and also talking to her about just general booky stuff and writing. So yeah, listen out for that.
Look forward
one.
To that. Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see you there.
Yeah, see you there.
See you there. Listen to us there. What?
What? Bye.
I'm so good at ending these things.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.